Town of Samberton Select Board meeting for June the 10th, 2020. And before we get into the meeting, I have an edict I would like to read. Good evening. As chairman of the Samberton Board of Selectmen, I am declaring that an emergency exists, and I am invoking the provisions of RSA 91-A:2, subparagraph 3B. Federal, state, and local officials have determined that the gathering of 10 or more people pose a substantial risk to our community in its continuing efforts to combat the spread of COVID-19. In concurring with their determination, I also find that this meeting is imperative to the continued operation of the Town of Samberton government and services, which are vital to public safety and confidence during the emergency. As such, the meeting will be conducted without a quorum of this body physically present in the same location. In accordance with Governor Sununu's Emergency Order Number 12 and pursuant to Executive Order 2020-04. At this time, I also welcome members of the public accessing this meeting remotely. Even though this meeting is conducted in a unique manner under unusual circumstances, the usual rules of conduct and decorum apply. Any person found to be disrupting this meeting will be asked to cease the disruption. Should the disruptive behavior continue thereafter, the person will be removed from this meeting. Please note that all votes will be taken during this meeting shall be done by roll call vote. I would ask that if you wish to speak, please state your name and wait until the chairman recognizes you and gives you the floor. This will minimize the confusion of two voices coming over the phone. Also, if you can mute your microphone while others are talking, it will cut out the background noise that may make it hard for others to hear the conversation. Let's start the meeting by taking a roll call attendance. When each member's name is called, please state your address and whether you are alone in the room or with someone during this meeting, which is required under the Right to Know law. I will start with the roll call vote of the selectman and town administrator. Tom Solotello.
Here. I'm home and alone.
Selectman Jim Dick.
Jim Dick, I'm here and I'm home alone.
Selectman John Olmsted is here and I'm home and I'm alone. Town Administrator Trish Stafford.
I am here, and I am home in Guilford, and I am alone.
Okay. With that done, we will move on to our agenda items. The first item on is, first off, is there any public out there in radio land that would like to make a public comment? Okay, hearing none, we will move on to our first item of business. In new business, the fire department radio replacement. Chief Dexter, are you there?
Good afternoon.
Okay, Chief, you have the floor. You want to tell us about the fire department radio?
Yep. So, did everybody have an opportunity to see the packet and my email to Trish? Over the last couple years, we've been trying to plan for radio replacements because the Motorola Astros have been end of life for quite some time, and Motorola is no longer servicing or making parts for these. So over the last couple years, the fire department has been working on trying to develop a plan to replace the radios, and I finally determined that it's because the radios are still working. We're not having any major issues with them, but we need to start the process of replacing them. So my thought was to start using, looking at surplus money at the end of the fiscal year and starting to do it that way instead of putting, you know, we have a total of 11 radios that are the Astro radios to replace. In the apparatus. One of the plans is then as we start to replace apparatus, to replace the radio at that time. But the long-term vehicles that were that are still in service, we need to replace those. So at the end of each year, I start looking at our surplus money and basically come to the Board of Selectmen to get permission to replace the radio using surplus money. And that's what I'd like to do before the end of the fiscal year is purchase one new radio to replace one in car one. And then in next fiscal year, we actually have it in the budget to purchase the radio for the new fire engine.
Okay, Paul, I'm looking at your quote from Ossipee Mountain, and looks pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, I would request, which I did not put in the email, which I should have, is that this would be a sole source request due to the nature of the equipment. There are very few Kenwood dealers that can also service locally. So that's why we use OME.
Yeah, isn't Ossipee Mountain, isn't that the one that does most of the work on both our police cars and our fire vehicles?
Correct. Plus, they're local enough. They have a shop right in Northfield that can do just about all the work. They would do the installs, those types of things.
Okay. And it looks like that is a total not to exceed $3,311.
And 60 cents.
And 60 cents, right.
Yep.
Hey, okay. Paul, this is Jim Dick.
Yep, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
So I get that you'll do this out of surplus and we'll have to move the money. Are you taking it theoretically out of your equipment maintenance and repair line, or which?
No, it would come out of the radio line.
Sorry,
I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Oh, there it is, radio maintenance and repair. Okay.
Okay, and I take it there's enough funding in that line to cover?
No, that line is overextended because we ended up having to replace the transformer or the repeater at Steel Hill this past year, and a portion was taken out of the highway budget, a portion taken out of the fire department, and a portion taken out of the police department budget to cover that. I'll be moving money from a couple other lines to fix that overage.
Okay. Any comments from the other selectmen?
Yeah, John, this is Jim again. Just, Paul, for your planning, as we move into the planning process for the budget, you know, one of the things we talked with the budget committee about last year is really trying to not eliminate, but start to reduce that excess budget that's available every year. So you should plan going forward, you know, to go ahead and put those into your budget so they've got the visibility and they get funded and we're not in a position where, something comes up, you know, and that money isn't there and you have a need for the radio. So that's all.
Yeah, that's, Jim, that's normally why, you know, a lot of things we put off until, you know, the end of May, early June, looking at the overall budget annually. As you know, I track my budget on a weekly basis, so I know exactly to the dime how much money I have. That's the way I kind of work the budget, where I kind of put off some of those bigger purchases, which I would normally do in that same case. Those are types of things that we need to do, but I wait until the end of the year just to make sure something big, bad, and ugly does not happen.
Yeah, get it. But I just don't want to leave you hanging in the future when there isn't as much left over and you've got a real requirement to replace the critical equipment.
Yep, understood.
And this way it makes sure that the money is there when you need it.
Correct.
Okay, I would make a motion then to approve the expenditure of $3,311.60 to Ossipee Mountain Electronics for the purchase of the new Kenwood radio. For which vehicle is this going in, Paul?
Car one.
In car one. Okay, that's my motion.
John, I'd like to just go ahead and amend that to include that it, with the funds to come from line 4220.357, radio maintenance and repair, and that we will waive the requirement for three bids and authorize Chief Dexter to sign the paperwork on the town's behalf.
Okay, that's an amendment to my motion.
Yes.
We'll need to vote on the amendment first. So I will. Do we have a? Well, I will second the. This is going to be weird. I will second the amendment.
Or you could just withdraw your motion, and we'll make that new one.
Okay, I withdraw my motion.
Friendly amendment.
Okay, and we will go with the new motion to
So I would move motion. That we So I'll make a motion that we authorize the fire department to expend up to $3,311.60 from line number 4220.357, radio maintenance and repair, to purchase a replacement radio from Ossipee Mountain, and that the board waives the requirement for three bids due to the unique nature of the equipment, and that we authorize Chief Dexter to sign the paperwork on the town's behalf.
I'll second that motion. Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I will do a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Solotello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion passes unanimously. Paul, you have the go-ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on. We have a request from the police department for a new hire. Chief Hinker, do you want to go ahead and brief us on that?
Sure, absolutely. And I see that you guys already did sign the paperwork reference to that, but I'll and I believe Tim might be on the line. I believe he was going to call in if you have any questions for him. But basically where we're at is we're very fortunate that Tim Stevens has recently moved to town. Tim has extensive law enforcement experience. He started in Colebrook, I think around 2003, worked for state police for many years, left the state for a short time, came back, and was the chief. It was a part-time position with Hill. And then he became most recently the chief of New Hampton. Earlier this year, for reasons that they still have not given to him, New Hampton did not renew a contract. So he found himself not working. I've worked with Tim for many years. I believe we probably met when he was with Hill. I ended up sitting on the oral board when he was hired by New Hampton. And obviously, when he was chief of New Hampton, we worked together, quite a bit. I know it's, I actually have a history with his family, his brother, Kevin, who unfortunately recently passed away. But Kevin was actually kind of my introduction to New Hampshire law enforcement, because when I was in college at UNH, I did an internship with New Hampshire State Police, and I was assigned to communications, and Tim's brother Kevin was my supervisor for that whole time. Then fast forward to when I worked for Belknap County, and then when I came to Samberton, his brother Wayne worked for the sheriff's office as a dispatcher. But yeah, Tim has extensive experience. We've done a full background on him. His department in New Hampton love him. They're devastated that he's not still with them. And the town gave him a glowing review, as an officer. You know, not that my opinion matters, but I think it's, you know, purely political that he was not kept going. And I think he's going to do great for us. At this time, we're hiring him part-time, kind of let him get a lay of the land, you know, see how he, you know, make sure he likes working with us. And you know, he has expressed interest. He may very well go full-time at some point with us. We still have that sixth position that with the COVID crisis, we have not been actively looking to fill for some, you know, some complicated reasons, just because it would be difficult to do that in this environment. So this could be definitely a huge win for everybody. He is technically he's not certified at the moment, but that will probably change next week when the Police Standards and Training Council meets. I submitted paperwork for him to get his certification renewed. It's been just over a month since it would have technically ended. So typically they make a vote and he is certified again. So there will be no academy time, and literally his training time will be learning the roads. We use the same record system they did. You know, I'm sure our policies are extremely close to New Hampton's, and he'll just go over those, and it should be a very quick process. And we will definitely look forward to taking him on.
Yeah, in reading through his resume that he sent in, we're lucky that he's got such an extensive background in law enforcement. So,
correct. Yep.
And
yep, an extensive military.
I just hope New Hampton doesn't change their mind and decide they want to try and get him back, because they can't have him.
Well, once he's been with the best, he's not going to want to go back. So
yeah.
That's the plan anyway.
Okay. Anybody have any comments before I make a motion?
Yeah. Hey, Steve, this is Jim. Just when you say part-time, how many hours are we looking at? And what is that going to do to your workload and rotation?
Basically, part-time is, with us, it's not a set amount of hours per week. Part-time typically is used to assist us in either filling shifts as far as if someone takes time off for, you know, weekends or shifts that we may only have one person on that we want a second, and he's available, he would come in and fill that. It's basically a big help to the full-time staff. As well as he would, like I said, if we just, something's going on and we need more people, we've used them in the past. As an example, we've been getting complaints about the, you know, speeding in areas of town. We can throw them in a car and have them do speeding patrols, you know, which will be very nice to help while the other guys are handling the calls, and that sort of thing. So basically with the way we run with part-time is they just heavily
fill in some gaps and, yeah.
Exactly, and you know, fill all kinds of the holes when needed. I mean, we've had, you know, issues in the past. If we had a lot of burglaries, we'd send them out in the certain areas, and they just very, very helpful to us.
Okay, great, thank you.
I don't know if this is the appropriate question, but if it's inappropriate, then don't answer it. But I I saw you reference the fact that the contract for him not being renewed in New Hampton was somewhat political. Did I hear that correctly?
That it was what?
Somewhat political.
I'm guessing. They didn't give him a reason. You know, they basically, because he typically, I was not, like, looking at my position, I was not hired under contract. You know, basically, as Chiefs, you know, we're actually, you know, we don't have to be. You know, and New Hampton chose to do it that way. So at the end of his contract, which ended in the end of April, they just didn't renew it. And, you know, even though he asked for a reason, the police department there has asked for a reason, and they didn't give him one. So, and especially when my lieutenant went up there and did a background on him, and they said he does a great job as an officer. So, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, Tom.
Okay.
But for what we need him for, he gets glowing reviews, obviously. So, and you know, I talked to, you know, other people that he works with for state police and other agencies that he's worked with over the years, and you know, nothing but great reviews on his work. And Shane, in fact, our officer, when he was with Hill, Shane worked for Franklin as a dispatcher, worked with him then. You know, great reputation.
That's fine. Thank you.
Tim, are you out there? Oh, maybe he's not.
No, Tim. Okay. I'm going to jump in here and make a motion that we approve the hiring of Tim Stevens as a part-time officer with the Samberton Police Department, starting at the established part-time rate of $20.67, grade 15, step 1, with the effective date to be June 10th, 2020.
I'll second it.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion of the motion?
No, I just want to say I did read all the material that Chief Hank had left and gave to us in our packet, and I feel very comfortable based upon the information in there that he'd be a good candidate for the position.
Okay. Any other comments? Hearing none, I'll do a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Solotello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. The motion passes unanimously. Go ahead and get Tim Stevens started.
Excellent. Thank you. And we are actually swearing him in on Monday. I'll take care of that. And I know normally you guys like to meet him. So, you know, as time goes on, when he's in training with us, using our social distancing, well, I'll make sure he meets all of you and you'll get to know him.
Very good.
Either that or
thank
you can stop us on the road for speeding and we'll meet him that way.
No, let's hope not, Tom.
Okay, moving on. Planning board meetings. Trish, you want to tell us what this was all about?
Sure.
Well, John, I'll jump on it because I asked Trish to put it on there. But, you know, we kind of left the last board meeting after we had the discussion about the situation with the cancellation of the planning board and, you know, the outstanding applications and all those impacts. But we never really established, you know, what our position is and what we want to communicate to the planning board about what we would like to see them do going forward. And so I think we just need to talk among ourselves and establish a position and communicate that to the planning board chair on we don't have the authority to direct them to do anything, but I think it's important that we establish what we would like to see them do, and then tell them that, so we avoid any confusion. And I know they're going to meet tomorrow night to talk about some of those options and what they want to do. And I think we just need to have an input to that so they understand clearly what the Board of Selectmen's expectation and desires are.
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid if we don't say something, it could just get kicked down the road, and you know, we may not have a meeting for quite a while. So
I think that's why we're having the meeting tomorrow night with the of the planning board is strictly to discuss how we're going to go about it in the future until we can actually get back together again. So tonight I was going to ask the question during the meeting sometime tonight, because I will be attending that meeting tomorrow night, and I need to be able to present the selectmen's collective view on what should happen.
So I'll go ahead and, you know, say my two cents, and we talked about it last week, but you know, I was disappointed that the board got canceled because of the second and third order impacts of what happened. I understand their concerns, but I think we have, you know, we have the ability to hold a safe and effective planning board meeting. It may not be traditional, you know, and it may have to be divided into a couple of parts where, you know, maybe we have hard copies of plans available somewhere like Old Town Hall, where we have plenty of room to spread people out if they are unable to access the electronic plans. And then we combine that with the online portion of the meeting. You know, the technology is there, and I think we're only limited by our imagination. And so I would very strongly encourage the planning board not to figure out why they can't meet, but to figure out how they can as soon as possible and start addressing, you know, some of the outstanding applications. And I understand that anything we do, we have to be aware of the impact of setting a precedent. And I recognize that, but by the same token, I don't think we can hold back. I mean, we're having a negative impact on residents and their ability to do their livelihood. And, you know, we need to take that into consideration. And if it has something that comes up down the road, and, you know, it doesn't meet, it's not something we can handle, then we'll have to address that separately. But I don't want to live in fear of what could happen in a meeting, you know, the next meeting down. I think we just need to agree that we want to press forward and resolve these things and get meetings back to as close on schedule as we can.
I agree with you. And I would add to that, unfortunately, this last meeting was an example where we had two what would have been fairly long site plan reviews. When you go through a site plan review, it usually takes about an hour, hour and a half to go through a site plan review normally, sometimes 2 hours, depending on how things go. I know I've sat in planning board meetings where we've been at a site plan review that's gone for 3.5 hours. So I would limit one site plan per meeting. You know, and I mean, I like your idea of being able to view the hard copy in some form or manner, one at a time, either up at the town hall or the old town hall, or even at the conference room in the regular town hall, town offices. But I agree with you. We need to do something and get going. We can't keep holding off citizens from being able to do to put things together the way they need to do it. Because if it comes true and we do have a second wave of this fall or winter, I mean, we could go for another 6 months and people wouldn't be able to do things. And, of course, by the time we get into October or November, the ground is starting to freeze and get hard, and you aren't able to do the construction and the maintenance that you need to do to put these things in. So I think we need to sort of urge the planning board to start meeting and start reviewing some of the items that we have backlog on, and get them done.
Yeah, I guess my only comment to that is, you know, if the board for whatever reason decided to only do one, then I think they also need to look at meeting more frequently in order to clear that backlog at least. Once we've got the applications in hand, so.
Yeah, they meet twice a month. So one is a workshop and one is a meeting. And what they would have to do in the case if they were only going to do one, they would have to do site plan reviews at both the workshop and the meeting, not just once a month. So
right.
that would be a change to their operating modem. So.
How much of a backlog is there?
What was that, Tom?
How much of a backlog is there currently?
Well, I know of two site plan reviews that have been put off, and there's a third site plan review coming up in, I think, a week or 2 weeks that would have to be either put off or if something isn't done, it would have to be put off or done some other way.
Hi, John. This is Deborah. Sorry, I'm just getting out of work and I'm just logging into this call.
Okay. Yeah, the selectmen were just thinking, we're just batting around some ideas of what I should recommend to the planning board at tomorrow night's meeting.
Sure. So if it's okay for me to talk to address this, the planning board, I would like to do that. Is that okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So the planning board, I called for a special meeting, and the planning board is meeting tomorrow evening so that we can discuss how we are going to move forward with taking care of business with the planning board. I spoke with Tricia regarding this last week. I told her what our plan was. My suggestion, and it's only my suggestion, that I am going to present to the board tomorrow evening in hopes that we are going to take a vote on it. I would like to continue with normal planning board business via teleconference. And as far as site plan reviews go with public hearings, I would like to have meetings either at the old town hall or at the town hall currently outside, so that we are able to meet in person to move forward with site plan review. So currently we have one site plan review that we put off, which is the Lobster Connection with Mark Conley. We have a site plan review that is on the agenda this week coming that we will actually need to address, not this week, but on another date. So those are the two site plan reviews that we have in front of the board. My suggestion again would be to meet in person, and if we have to meet outside, and if we have to do it at 5 o'clock. Those are my suggestions, but we need to move forward with these site plan reviews. We did take a vote. Steve sent emails out to each individual board member, and the census was we were not comfortable doing site plan reviews with public hearings via teleconference. So this was why we canceled our meeting 2 weeks ago, and why we are having this meeting tomorrow night to discuss how we're going to move forward.
Well, there's plenty of room within the town hall to meet the standard of social distancing for the public as well as the planning board.
But I thought that there was I thought that we couldn't gather more than 10 people in a building, because my suggestion would be to have a meeting at the Old Town Hall, but Trish believes we cannot have more than 10 people in the building. So even though we could social distance, we can't have more than 10. So then I said, okay, then we could do it outside, but we have to be able to hold a meeting somewhere. I did discuss this with Steve today. He was going to reach out to NHMA and Tim Lang to see if that number has changed. I know that restaurants can have 50% capacity, but I don't know if town meetings or any sort of other gathering is allowed to have a 50% capacity. So I'm not sure that Steve got those answers today from either Tim Lang or NHMA.
Yeah, this is Steve.
Oh, hi, Steve.
Yeah. I have not heard back from NHMA. Tim Lang did respond. He said, there will be an announcement coming tomorrow. Please stand by.
Okay.
Well, I've not heard of any upcoming announcement, but that was his response from Tim Lang.
Ideally, my first thought when I spoke to Trish was to be able to hold the meetings at the Old Town Hall, because it is big enough that we could social distance. However, she reminded me of the not to have more than 10 people in a building or gathered in a building at the same time. So then I came up with, okay, then we'll have to do it outside. But we have to do it. Somehow we have to be able to have the meetings. So this is what I will be presenting to the board tomorrow night, and we will be voting on.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, will you be taking public comment on this topic?
Absolutely.
Yes.
It is open.
Which chairman were you talking about?
A chairman of the Board of Selectmen meeting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you have a comment, go ahead.
Yeah, my name's Larry Major. I'm with the Ready Mix Companies. We are in a butter to a project that is pending approval of the planning board, and the project is proceeding. We do have some concerns with the project. We're not against the project, but we have some concerns with the project. That we tried to address with the property owner. We're just concerned because the project is continuing to move forward. We're watching it move forward before our eyes, and we know that there's no approval. And we know that those concerns have not been addressed in the site plan or in the site plan review process. That concludes my comment.
Okay. Any other comments?
John, this is Trish. May I chime in for a second?
Yeah, Trish. Go ahead.
So the municipal managers group from the executive director, Margaret, said she doesn't seem to think that she said the stay-at-home advisory is going to, for people over a certain age or with medical conditions, is going to continue. They don't think that the emergency orders will be lifted She said there's no time, including the virtual meeting. She doesn't think that they're going to be lifted anytime soon. So I don't know. We might have to just consider other alternative ways to make sure that we can move forward with the planning board.
Yeah. Hey, John, okay. This is Jim. I want to clarify. So the executive order prohibiting gatherings doesn't matter whether you're inside or outside. It just says schedule gatherings. So we don't gain anything by moving it into a building or out of a building.
And the stay-at-home orders are different than the state of emergency, which I don't know if we're making
right,
sure
but this
that we
is
have
the,
that clear.
Yeah, this is the emergency order number 16, which is the one that limits the public gatherings. It doesn't specify whether it's so it doesn't matter if you're inside or outside. The same limit applies. To Deborah's point, and Deborah, I don't know if you heard the beginning of that because I know you were just getting out of work. Yeah, I think we have to look at some kind of hybrid where we have a physical location available for people who can't access the material online, but we would really try to conduct the majority, and at that place, maybe there is only one board member. Maybe it's only the chairman and Steve Lauren is the planning assistant. Everybody else participates electronically, and we encourage the public to the maximum extent possible to do it electronically. And if they absolutely can't, we'll have them there. If we get, people want copies of it, then maybe we just bite the bullet and we spend the money to make copies for abutters if that's going to be an issue for them as well. But I think we have to look at kind of mixing and matching the different ways to tackle this problem. And, what I'm afraid of is we schedule something, we plan for it to be outside and it's going to rain that night. Well, we got to have something that we can just execute. And, if it gets to the point, for example, if too many people show up, we would have to limit entry, but they still have access through the electronics. And I know it gets on a slippery slope and people could, you could do all kinds of what ifs, but I think the reality is we've got a fairly limited scope here, and we can figure out how to, pull all those different levers to be able to make it work for everybody.
Yeah. And we still have, I did purchase the Zoom account. So I haven't figured out exactly how to use it yet, but we have it as of this week. So that is also another avenue that the planning board could utilize.
Chairman,
okay.
Steve here.
I know the executive order 16. I think the wording says in groups of 10 or more. Groups of 10 or less. I'm sorry. No more than 10.
Okay. I actually was honestly hoping that, this was going to be lifted by now, but clearly that isn't going to happen. So we do need to figure out a plan. And again, our concern is in doing site plan review with public hearings is that not everyone has access to the internet and not everyone has access to a computer. And I know this firsthand because of my work that I do. A lot of people do not have that access. And if they do, they have a telephone. And do you know how difficult it is to see stuff like that via a 3-inch, 4-inch screen on your telephone? So, there was just... Go ahead.
Yeah, Deborah, it's absolutely valid. And so I think, again, maybe what we need to look at is, in the announcement we say, anyone who feels they won't be able to properly access material through an online method, please contact the planning department, you know, to make arrangements to view a hard copy. You know, try to think of all those possible roadblocks, and let's put all the information out there up front so we have a way they can either come to the town hall, or they can ask for a hard copy, or they can watch it online, whatever works for them. We're just going to have to come at it from all different angles.
Okay. We will
discuss. And it's going to cost us. You know, if we have to make print copies of plans for people, that gets expensive, but, you know, that's the world we're living in right now, and we'll just add it to our submission for a claim against the CARES money.
Yeah, can I add to that, Steve?
Go ahead.
I was going to pick up on what Jim Dickett said earlier about getting us out. Currently, all the notices that go out to the abutters have a paragraph in there about they can come in, you know, call ahead, that they can look ahead, or schedule a meeting in the office to look at the plans. But I think what we could add or improve the communication would probably be to all the other people who are not abutters but maybe interested residents, and just put it on the notice. When we post a notice for the planning board meetings, and here's where it's happening. Oh, and also at the bottom of that, say anybody, whether you're in a butter or not, can call ahead, schedule an appointment, and they can see the plan. So everybody has an opportunity to see it all the time, and I try to encourage them to come in before the planning board meeting so they can have a lot of their questions already made up in their mind when they come to the meeting. But I don't think that is currently going on the public notice, like it's posted on the town office, so that would help.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, applicants could have the applicants submit additional copies, like 11x17s of the plans. That's typically what we do if we want additional copies to have the abutter submit it. Of course, in this case, whether you know we want to ask them to submit them or we can make a few 11x17s.
I don't think it's appropriate to ask an applicant to go to extra trouble because we have a problem, you know, setting up something. But, you know, you're right. All of that is possible, and I think it's a good idea to advertise it widely and also point out that, you know, for example, all of the Lobster Connection site plan is on the website and can be viewed there.
Right.
I didn't know about it until it came up last week. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a glitch, and I've got to look again this evening because there was a time it was off of the site. They're active planning board applications. Now, Solar Garden's not up there because they've not submitted revised plans. But I've got to check and make sure, you know, Connolly is back up. I believe it is, but I'll double check on that. But, yeah, that's fairly new. Back in April, I've had all those plans. Anything that's going to be before the planning board has been noticed would go on there, and then people can look at those at any time. So, again, that could be something to add. And the public, besides the abutters, the public in general. So you go to the plane or the website anytime and see that.
What about training? Is there any training available to help us as the planning board with putting these plans on whatever site we're going to be using in order to present them?
I don't know of any. Steve, do you know of any, or Trish?
Well, I do have a question. I think Jim Dick would know, but because those plans are posted on the town's website under the planning board, could those be screen shared, or do they have to be in a separate? I don't know what the planning board. Plans. I thought those were all PDFs, so I don't know why those could not be screen shared if it was a Zoom meeting.
Yeah. So yes,
like
they can be. But if somebody's online and they're looking at a screen share, they might as well just look at, you know, download it and look at it themselves. But yes, they can be in their current format in the PDFs that are on the, and they're on the website right now. I'm looking at them. They can be screen shared, but as far as available training, Trish, that may be something, you know, to check with NHMA and see if – I know the topic has come up, you know, how to effectively conduct a public hearing under these circumstances. So we can reach out to them and see what advice or if they put anything together that we can take advantage of and help Deborah and the other boards out.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is Larry Major from ReadyMix again. I have a Zoom account. It was very easy to figure out in terms of training. And the Zoom app, there's even a place where you can go and find different topics and how to screen share and things of that nature. So it's pretty easy to navigate and get used to. And I find it one of the most user-friendly applications that I've used for virtual meetings.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be happy to help you out if you want to give me a call. I'm at Pike Industries, and I can show you what I know about it.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question to Steve. The town has the freeconferencecall.com, and that has screen sharing. I don't know if anybody knows if that's really any different than what Zoom can do.
So I use both. I use Zoom for work. I mean, Zoom is just a more advanced platform. So we'll have the same capability. Doesn't matter whether we're using the free one or the licensed one. So either way, we have the ability to share, to share the screen and display the plans. So we can use that as we need to. It'll be a matter of timing, and if, we can work with you and Deborah, whichever one you're most comfortable with is the one we go with. Just make sure we notice it the right way.
Okay. Yeah, my question in that would just be we'd probably have to have some help. The chairman would pretty much run the meeting. I would believe Audrey, the recording secretary, and I might help coordinate things, because if we're looking, if people want to speak, people want to raise their hands, whatever, somebody or both of us, myself and Audrey, monitor that, because if we're manipulating the screen, if I'm manipulating the screen, I might not see somebody wanting to ask a question. So I'm just saying, staff.
Those are all good
me
topics.
Me and Audrey,
for the,
if that's adequate or not.
Yeah, those are all good parts of the discussion for tomorrow, and then when you come up with your recommendation, how you want to go, we can figure out the resources to help you, address each of those concerns.
Good.
Right, and that was my concern about when I said training. Obviously, I use lots of platforms via work and actually through school, going to UNH right now. But we need to have one person who's going to be able to navigate the screens. And if it's going to be Steve, I know that Steve has a lot of issues with, his internet at his house. So
VPN.
Your VPN. So we need to be able to figure something out. Who is going to be the person who's going to be navigating, moving from one site plan to the next, or if someone is talking about a particular area, zooming into that area, that's what I'm talking about. Who's going to be able to train that one person in order to do that, if it's going to be Steve? And if so, I'm not sure that Steve can do that from home, which would mean he would need to be in the office, I would imagine.
Yeah, we'll work that out.
So again, I would
be in the office, or
capture all those concerns, and we'll come up with a plan to address them all for you, so that before this thing kicks off, there's a firm plan in place of how it's going to get addressed and handled.
Okay.
Okay. Is that the end of the comments for this? For this issue?
Well, so,
or anybody have
so John,
more?
Is Jim. I'm good with the direction and the guidance of the planning board, since Deborah was here to hear it. I think we should go back, though, to Mr. Major's comments and his concern about what's going on with the restaurant moving forward. And so, Ms. Major, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So I think first thing is just to make clear that there are two different activities going on. There's obviously the site plan that's been submitted for approval and endorsement by the planning board. Because of the delays, the applicant and their company, BPS, came to the board to request the ability to put a tent outside for outside seating to comply with the governor's reopening directions. So I don't know, when you're talking about seeing progress and seeing things move forward, if it shouldn't be related to actually either thing, because nothing's been formally approved yet. But when you say you see progress, you see things moving forward, are you talking about actual physical changes at the site?
Oh, definitely. He's cleared the site right up to the property line, and they are moving earth on the site right now. I can't speak about this week, but I was there last weekend on Saturday, I believe, and there was a bulldozer out there pushing dirt around.
Okay.
As I said, we're not opposed. We're not intrinsically opposed to what he's doing, but as an abutter, we have some concerns that we want to make sure are going to be addressed, and that has not been satisfied.
Sure. So, Steve Lauren, you still there?
Yes.
So where is the limit where a property owner, stops working on their own property and starts crossing into into execution of the plan?
That's the question. That's a good question. He can do some of that earthwork, and I don't know that he's done anything recently. A couple of weeks, or I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, he was moving and clearing, I think he had cleared some trees in the back part of the property. I did speak to Jeff Cloutier yesterday extensively from Ready Mix because he was asking, what was happening. I told him about the open air permit process that went forward. But as far as the earthwork, he can do that. I mean, there is a line that we cross to get into where he's actually working on an active site plan. I was out there Friday. I've been out there a couple times a week just to, go drive by, see if there's anything going on, and I haven't seen anything. But what has happened is that clearing and land, he's grading an area. He had a permit to demolish a building, so there was a lot of activity there, demolishing that building and leveling that area out. So I have not, as of, Monday. Yeah, I was by there Monday. There's nobody there. So I have not observed anything that he's violated, any zoning restrictions.
Okay.
We do have the comments to the site plan review from Ready Mix that they're concerned about, the operation of a dining venue next to their operation. So we do have those comments. They'll be reviewed again by the planning board at a hearing. That's what I understand. Their concerns are just, maybe a conflicting operation between the two businesses. And I know they've been asking about fencing, but that'll be dealt with at the site plan review.
Right. But so what I would ask is that you keep a very close eye on that. I understand Mr. Major's concern, and it's valid. You can't get the cart too far in front of the horse.
Right.
So, we need to keep an eye and make sure that they don't go any further than they're allowed without the site plan approval. And frankly, it's also kind of helps them avoid getting too far out in front of things if changes are required or any other conditions are placed on the approval. So, Mr. Major, does that help address your concern with what you're seeing right now?
Yeah, I've done a lot of permitting for Pike and for Ready Mix, and I would never move a spoonful of dirt before I had a planning board approval. So it's just a little bit shocking to me personally. As you're saying, getting the horse too far out ahead of everything, and that's where we stand on it. You know, we do have some concerns. Mostly, they're just based on making sure there's physical separation between our operation and his operation, because we're an industrial operation, and big trucks are attractive to a lot of people, and we really don't want folks wandering across the property line to come see mixers on a Saturday when there's nobody on our property to police them. You know what I mean? And we also would like some the visual separation. What we're asking for is a fence or some kind of screening, so that people aren't seeing us doing our thing while he's trying to do his thing, which are two very different operations. He's an entertainment and restaurant type of business, as I understand what he's trying to do. We're making concrete, we're shipping it off to foundations and slabs and stuff.
Yeah. So I think all that will get, fair adjudication and consideration at the planning board at the actual site review. I just want to make sure that nothing is going forward on that site that's not anything any property owner could do with their own land, until that approval process goes through. So I would just encourage you to stay in touch with Stephen. If he's going to be keeping an eye on it, if you see something that you think is a step too far, please don't hesitate to let him know so he can go out and check on it.
Absolutely. I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you for hearing us.
Number 7800.
John, it's the sector. This is John Olmsted. Let me interject a comment here, and then we'll go on. I go by that site almost every day because I just live a couple miles from there, and that's on my way out. And I've been keeping an eye on it as things have been progressing. So I too am watching out for it. Okay, did somebody else have a comment?
Yeah, John, it's Chief Dexter.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was there yesterday and spoke to Mr. Connolly in trying to determine when he was going to need his tent inspection, because I need some documentation from the tent company to start that process. My conversation with him is they're basically leveling off that section where they're going to be putting the tent, and looking at just setting the perimeter around that area. So I'm not sure what any of the dirt work they're doing appears to be just for leveling that site for the tent application and making sure they have the proper soils so that they can set the tent stakes. That was my conversation with him. And he anticipated being ready to open the last week of June.
Okay. Do we have any other comments?
Well, he does have an open-air permit by the Board of Selectmen, at least for outside seating. And, in fact, I believe the selectmen today signed off on that. And Trish gave me a copy, and I did hand-deliver a copy of that to his business. But I've been by there, and I drove on the property, and he's doing nothing that any other property owner in town can do on his own land. And I think the issue is that the problem I'm hearing in this conversation is really has not much to do with him, but has more to do with the planning board, that he wasn't able to get the site plan review hearing in a timely manner. And I think that's the crux of the problem with some of the questions coming up. And it's not his fault as an applicant. I think the planning board needs to take the responsibility for screwing up. That's my opinion. And so I think they need to figure out how they're going to accommodate, as Jim Victor talked about, accommodate the applicants and accommodate the abutters and other people who may want to have some input into site plan review.
Okay. Anybody?
I have a comment. Yeah, I have a comment, John. Deborah from Planning Board, Chairman of the Planning Board. Why did the Planning Board screw up? I guess my question is, Tom said that the Planning Board screwed up. Why did the Planning Board screw up? We did not stop this from happening. We canceled our last meeting because the Planning Board needed to try to figure out what the best way was to move forward with site plan review and public comment. One meeting was canceled. I'm not sure that we need to take responsibility and that the Planning Board screwed up somehow.
Well, 2 days before the meeting, didn't you folks advise him that that was canceled for his site plan review? And in your minutes, as I understand it, the reason for the cancellation of the Planning Board meetings indefinitely was because of the virus. And the selectmen never told any board, including the Planning Board, that we should discontinue the normal operations of the town of San Martin in any manner, that people need to find a way to do town business during this period of time. And that's an obligation that we all have, including the Planning Board. And, the selectmen never authorized any body or group to postpone their responsibility because of the virus, postpone doing their work because of the virus. You find a way to meet your obligations. And so I think the Planning Board, from my opinion, has made a serious error in judgment. And, I'm not going to argue the point. I'm just expressing my opinion that the selectmen never took a vote, never even made a comment about any board in town or group that meets on behalf of the residents postpone their meetings and obligations because of the virus. We have probably right now, more of an expectation because of the situation to find a way to meet our obligations rather than try to put them off. So I would disagree, and that's my viewpoint.
Okay, well, I'm going to disagree. I do not believe the Planning Board screwed up. The Planning Board actually has a pretty big responsibility to make, not only to the residents of the town, but to the applicants and to our board members. It is was a difficult decision to make, Tom. It's not easy to do a site plan review with public hearing via teleconference. And we thought that it was best not to do this. We also thought that the governor was going to lift the stay-at order 2 days prior to that meeting. However, that did not happen. Instead, it got extended. So we did what we thought was best. And again, we will discuss it tomorrow night, but I'm not sure that the board is going to feel that doing site plan review with public comment is in the best interest for us to do via teleconference. So we will discuss it, and we will come up with a plan tomorrow night. But I do not believe that the Planning Board screwed up. I do not believe that. So
I
disagree.
Can I finish what I'm saying? I have no issue
Absolutely.
With either, but I will say, and I'll go on record, that I think the Planning Board has been, in this type of situation, negligent. And that's my viewpoint. And it's done a disservice to the applicants and the abutters and people in town that the business that we should be doing is not getting done in a timely manner, and you need to figure out a way to do it. That's one selectman's opinion. The other two may disagree
okay.
with me
okay.
as well.
Okay, folks, I'm gonna break in here. We've got other business we need to get to, and we can argue this for the next hour or two, but I don't think we're going to get any further. I think tomorrow night at the planning board meeting, the planning board will discuss how they're going to move forward and make the plans that they need to make to try and move forward in a way that is fair to all the citizens and also fair to the committee members. Deborah, thank you for being here tonight. You now know how the selectmen would like to see things go. So you can, I think you've got a plan. We can discuss the plan tomorrow night, and I think we'll move forward from there. But I'd like to continue moving forward with the selectmen's meeting if we can.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. I'll see you. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving forward, we're going to move on to the employee town office COVID discussions. I know we have gotten a letter from the rec department with some questions about the pay. Jim, did you get a copy of that? Tom, did you guys get a copy of that?
No.
Yeah, I did. And so this is another one I had asked Trish to kind of tee up, because I think there's two parts to it. One is, you know, what are we going to do going forward with respect to employees, and particularly the ones that are unable to do their jobs, and that by and large falls on the rec department just because of circumstances. And then the second part I think we need to get to is to talk about what steps do we want to take with changing how we're operating at town office and start to bring more of the employees who work there back in on a regular basis, start having some appointments for residents, because although we've been doing it remotely, it's not ideal. So now I think now's the time to address that as well. But in terms of the employees, we had set a policy when this started that we would continue to pay all the employees at their regular allotted hours, whether they could do the job or not, and we would try to get them to fill in as best we could with some additional help and support for some of the other departments where it made sense. I think, that's been now 3 months that we've been on that plan, and I don't think we see any sign of this letting up anytime soon. In fact, from the summer perspective, the rec department already canceled the summer day camp, so that's off the schedule. And I think we're at the point now where we need to talk about whether we're going to continue this policy or if we're going to go ahead and furlough people and let them take advantage of the unemployment assistance that's available through the state.
Yeah, I think that's what we were getting at with the with this discussion being on the agenda. I know in the rec department, with them canceling the summer camp, looking at what she was saying on here with Dolly's hours increasing and Michaela's hours increasing, and then with the after-school program, the one gal going, the hours increasing, I'm not too sure how we can justify increasing the hours if they're not using the hours that are currently being that they are currently gone through, if they aren't using those completely. Anybody
Hi,
else?
Hi, this
have
is
comments?
Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Hey. So I did talk with one of the employees, and she wanted me to reach out because with working before and after care, she gets paid about a little bit under 14 hours a week. And typically when we do summer day camp, her hours do go up to 40. And she was completely fine with me talking to you guys to see what your plan was, because she would be willing to, you know, file for unemployment if need be. She was definitely willing to, because she understands everything going on. So that's pretty much what I wanted to, you know, ask tonight. Should I be having everybody, you know, I don't know how that would work. If they would get laid off, and then hopefully when the kids go back to school in the fall, they could, you know, resume their position as the, you know, for before and after care. Presumably, if we can run that program.
Yeah, I think, and this is just my thoughts, I think if they do go back to school and we do start the before and after care, I think they would be the first ones to come back. Their jobs would be the first one, and they would be the first ones to fill those. It's just right now I'm having a little bit of a problem increasing somebody's hours when the work isn't there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, and John, I think, you know, I think what we have had in place since the beginning of this was a very, humane way to try to help people out. But, you know, you talk about increasing hours. I think we've reached the point, and we see that this is not going to be a very short-term situation, that we really need to, pay people for work that's being done, not just pay them for, an average or a notional number of hours. So I think probably most of the employees that are impacted would probably do better off on unemployment than what they're getting through the town. And I think at some point we have to recognize that we've got to balance the responsibility to the employees and the attempt to keep them protected with our fiscal responsibility, and not be sending money out the door that the town's not getting anything in return for.
And
yeah, I think when we first started this, when we first talked about this and talked about paying the employees, keeping them on the payroll, I think initially we thought this was going to be a short-term thing for maybe a month, month and a half, and it wasn't. We didn't expect it was going to run for 3, 4, even 6 or 8 months. But I would also like to put the message out to the people that we do lay off or we do furlough, that they will be the first ones hired back once we get back to normal operation.
So can I say one more thing?
Sure. Go ahead, Amanda.
So when we had when the decision was made to cancel summer day camp, we did agree to do weekly activity bags for curbside pickup. So I have put a lot of that together. So going forward, I would be available, so every Monday I would be at the Old Town Hall, where parents would have, staggered times where they could pick up these weekly activity bags. So that's, something else. But I've also, offered my help to Julie multiple times and anybody, any other department who needs help. So just to put that out there for everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that your position was one of the ones we were considering furloughing right now, but I that's just me. I haven't talked to the other selectmen.
Okay, I just wanted to fill everybody in that I am doing things.
I do think, Amanda, that Peg might have some, she needs some help probably moving some files at some point coming up here soon for year-end type stuff. So there is work that definitely could be sort of done during this time as well.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
She's beginning her, like, year-end, like, moving, you know, switching the year over.
Okay, I'll reach out to her.
Yeah. And we haven't hired any lifeguards for this year for the beaches, I don't think, Amanda. Have we?
No, I'm pretty sure at one of our meetings we said that we were not going to do lifeguards this year. It was going to be swim at your own risk.
Yeah, so
there's nothing in the budget for lifeguards.
Nope.
Yeah, so I think it's basically probably Dolly and Michaela that we're talking about mostly.
Okay.
And it sounds like you were saying Michaela said she would be willing to apply for unemployment.
Yeah, she reached out to me and wanted me to see when the last week that she would be paid. So that way she can get the filing started for unemployment.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, John, I think I think at this point, you know, Amanda has, you know, fiscal responsibilities for managing her department, and we need to maintain those. But until something changes and we see, you know, programs coming back or our opportunity to offer programs coming back, I think we need to, you know, lay off all of the part-time employees. And we can certainly have a caveat that when the position reopens, they will be the first one, you know, that's going to be offered. But I don't, you know, I think we're just going to really have to pare the recreation department per se down to just Amanda at this point until things take a turn.
I agree. I hate to do it, of course. Everybody hates to lay off an employee, but until we know where this is going and how long, I think you're right, Jim. Go ahead, Amanda. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I just had a question about that. So what should we say the last pay week would be then? So that way I can let them know and everything.
Can you come in tomorrow, Amanda, and sit down with me, and we can sort of go over that, because I think there's other things that we would need to do with, like, Primax and all of those our insurance company and stuff.
Yeah, I can definitely come in.
All right.
Okay, so we'll leave that in your hands, Trish.
Yep. Did you guys want to just feel comfortable paying them through this week and then sort of move forward on a fresh pay week?
Hi. So this is Jim. I'd be comfortable going. When you say this week, you mean through the 19th? Or through the...
Sure. I meant through Friday, but... what is this Friday?
I would say we should go through the, you know, next Friday, the 19th. That gives, you know, at least a full week notice. And, you know, I know we're not obligated to do anything like that, but again, I don't want to put people in an overly difficult situation. And I know it does take some time, you know, for those things to kick in. So,
yeah,
John, I would recommend.
We want to be fair to the to everybody concerned, and I would agree with you, Jim. I think going through to the 19th would be a good date.
Do they need some type of verification from the town that they're being furloughed to get them easier access to both the state unemployment and the federal stimulus program, which I think that expires on July 31st. Would they need some verification from the town that they're being laid off because of the virus, the impact of the virus, so that they can collect their unemployment? In other words, they've got to give unemployment a reason for them applying for the assistance.
I believe that that's the case when we actually, you know, quote-unquote, lay them off or furlough them, that's going to trigger something in Primex to contact us as soon as they file for unemployment. And then Primex is going to come and ask us what the details behind it all. And they sort of file that paperwork on our behalf with unemployment.
Well, how about we authorize Trish in her capacity as administrator to verify with the employees and verify as needed with unemployment that those employees are in fact being furloughed by the town, but hopefully will be called back when things improve. I just want to make sure that they don't have any problems in applying for unemployment with questions that the later might have with respect to their request. So I'm trying to make sure it's clean and neat, that they wouldn't have any difficulty or questions come up about the validity of them being furloughed. That's all.
No, hey, Thomas, Jim, I agree 100%. And Trish, since HR is your thing, I'm guessing you could probably get a good sample termination letter that has all the right words in it that we could give employees, so that it triggers all of those benefits, and it has all the information they need, so they're not trying to come back and get additional stuff if they need it.
Yeah, I can definitely, as vast as my knowledge in HR is, I've never actually had to lay anybody off. So, but I'm sure
I can figure it out. And Trish, in that letter also, try and give some sort of reassurance that that they will be the first ones hired back once those positions become available again.
Absolutely.
All right. So, John, I would suggest we do this as a formal motion, since it involves the termination of employees and money.
It's not termination, it's furloughing.
Yeah.
Well, so if you look at it, I was doing some research earlier, and they actually recommend against the term furlough, because that doesn't really have a legal definition. And so, again, you're looking to avoid. So typically furlough is interpreted as an unpaid leave of absence. Well, that's not the same thing as losing your job. You're just not getting paid.
Okay.
I think to be, again, just to be very clean, so that the employees who are eligible can go after benefits, we terminate the positions, and then we, when this all is over, we can hire them back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's obviously an easy process for us to hire somebody. So.
Okay. My question is Dolly and Michaela the only two that we are laying off, or is there more?
It's only those two. The other two staff, this is their last week of pay because school would potentially be over this week, and they are both aware of that.
Okay. Then I will make a motion that we lay off Dolly and Michaela from their positions, their current positions, and how do I want to word this? And provide that they will be the first ones to be brought back when those positions become available again, or the first ones that are offered that those positions when they become available again.
Jim,
does that sound okay to everybody? Okay. Yeah. Okay, I have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I will call for a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Salatello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes also. Motion passes unanimously. Amanda, you and Trish get together and figure out the details and the letter.
Okay, will do.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Not something we like to do.
No, no. It's unfortunate.
It is.
So I think
I just want to make one statement here. With current situations and everything going on, I, as a selectman, will never defund our police department. That's just my comment.
Yep.
With everything that's being bandied around, I just wanted to put that out there. Okay.
The second part of this, I think, is talk about what changes do we want to consider for operation at the town office. We've been kind of cycling employees on the executive side through town clerk, tax collector has been up and running. Julie and Gloria have been there. The window is working very well, and Julie is pretty happy with that. We have people trying to get assessing data. This, especially right now, even with everything going on, it's a big time for the housing market. There's lots of sales and things going, and so there's lots of calls coming in to get assessing data and all of that. As we talked about just a little earlier with the planning board, this is summer project time. You got a lot of people home. So we've only been having them come in sporadically to try to avoid, the number of people in the office. I think we're at the point where we kind of have to talk about, and we know we have a couple of employees who are at high risk, and we've, been working around those schedules. And so I had asked Trish to kind of get a pulse of the executive staff there to see what they were comfortable with and, what kind of changes we might think about. And, my initial thought was if we kept the office time for our employees that are at risk to just the Tuesdays and Thursdays that they need to, process payroll and sign checks and that. And then maybe we could open up Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to have regular scheduled, office hours for planning, assessing, town clerk or town administrator. Probably still stick to an appointment basis. We don't want a whole gaggle of people showing up, but at least there's somebody there to answer the phone, there to schedule an appointment if somebody needs to come in and see a plan or get a copy of their tax card or whatever it is. And then we can at least start to open up some of the services, but in a way that, minimizes the risk to everybody. So, Trish, I thought if you got a... Yep. Oh, go ahead, John.
Jim, I'm sorry.
No,
I thought Wednesdays we had one of our high-risk Wednesday morning was working.
Well, but you remember last week when we talked about, that the changes to that schedule, I was thinking we could just ask her to start that. She was going to switch from Wednesdays to Thursdays anyway as part of the agreement to stay.
Yeah.
So we can just make that change earlier. so she wouldn't have to worry about Wednesdays. So we just keep the Tuesdays and Thursdays.
I did reach out to some of the employees in the town office, and I think the general consensus was they're fine to sort of get back to a normal type of coming into work every day. And I did talk to our treasurer who's had requested the Thursday schedule, and she said that she would be okay with still being able to be in the office just as minimally as possible and be able to take some of her work home with her still,
sure.
Which I thought was pretty reasonable, especially as things sort of, like, I guess, calm down a little bit here. There's not as much of the influx of cases, I guess.
Yeah, summer's coming.
So. And then making sure that we have, you know, if we're going to have people in the lobby, just, like, taping down, you know, where the 6 feet barriers or areas would be, and just keeping people out of the lobby area as much as we can, like, just really two people in the lobby. And closing the door
I think
to
that
the
would
bathroom
be a maximum.
So that keeping the bathroom closed off to just employees for the time being is, I think, another concern.
Yeah, we have that one door that we can close and virtually close off the bathroom to everybody but the town clerk tax collector, because everybody else can go back through the conference room.
Right.
No more than two people in the lobby at a time, one at the window and one waiting.
So Trish,
what days are
you suggesting then?
I don't see why we honestly couldn't start to come back every single day, as long as we make sure that we have all of those areas marked off and we're all clear as to the expectations. And, you know, if the treasurer wants to come in on Thursdays and sign her things and do what she needs to do and, you know, take her work home for the rest of the week, she seemed to be amenable to that.
Hey, John, it's Keith Dexter.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think it's certainly a good idea to start leaning back towards some normal operation at the town office. We will continue to help out with supplies as far as gloves, masks, but I think maybe Trish and I can get together and come up with a policy for the employees as they start to come back. You know, regarding wearing of face pieces while they're in the office, having those interactions with other employees. I think those are important aspects of keeping everybody safe and making sure that, you know, people are following those types of rules. So maybe Trish and I can get together in the next day or so and come up with a policy for all employees to follow regarding that.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yep.
Because we'll continue, you know, our medical calls have kind of dropped off. Our illegal outside fires and fire-related calls have skyrocketed because people are home. but our medical calls have dropped off because nobody wants to go to the hospital. And so our supplies, not that they're over, you know, we don't have an overabundance of extra supplies, but we will continue to help out with masks and gloves, you know, as we've done for the town clerk and for the finance officer and the treasurer as they've been coming in over the course of the last couple months. So we'll continue that. And I think it'll work.
Yep.
Okay, my only question was...
And I think we...
Want to try it on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for a couple of weeks and see how things go with the thought that if they go okay, then we'll open up 5 days a week? Or do we want to just go ahead and jump in with 5 days a week?
I'd kind of like to see us ease into it. Let's try, you know,
a better feel for the apprehension of the staff. Don't you think, Trish?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch all of what you said.
I was just saying that maybe that's a good thing for you to decide. You know, you have a better feel for what the current employees have for apprehension about opening back up and coming back to work. I think that may be something that you might have a better grasp on of how many days.
I think that if we start with the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, maybe until the next board meeting and just sort of see where everybody's at, and we can still work with that, the policy that Paul and I come up with, and just sort of after the...
I think that would be good, because I'd rather start a little restrained and open it up more than start full and then find out that, you know, it turns out people really aren't comfortable and we have to back off.
Yeah,
baby steps.
So, yeah, if we...
I think, too, if we can give people, like, a schedule as to when, like, assessing is going to be there and when planning is going to be there, when I'm going to be there, then still, I think that it'll take a lot of the brunt off of the town clerk side as well, because they field a lot of questions.
Yeah, Julie gets answers a lot of calls about other departments. So, so Trish, were you envisioning that, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday would basically be regular work days for you, planning and assessing, and then we'll continue to flex the work between working at home and working in the office for finance and treasurer?
That's all well and good, except for I need to be with Peg a lot of the time, so I'll
okay,
do
well,
my best.
Okay, well, yeah, but...
Yeah. Peg and I do a lot of work together.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more about Terry and Steve, so they should plan to their hours. I mean, I know Steve's got, limited, but Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they should plan to be in the office, regular work day, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays they can continue to do the telework.
Sure. Yep.
Okay. And so, John, I would also suggest that even though we'll have people there, we still require appointments. So we don't get a line of people out the door. Limited to the two people in the lobby. We've got the doorbell there, so if somebody shows up, they can ring the bell so people know they're there. We just kind of ease back into it a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the optimal word here was ease back into it, not jump into it. I think that's a good plan. And we'll see how it works for a couple of weeks, and if everything goes okay, then we can possibly open it up to 5 days a week. But I think to avoid having a lot of people standing outside, congregating, waiting to get in, I think if we set up an appointment, the appointment schedule, like you were saying, it would further keep people socially isolated or socially separated.
Yeah.
Hey, John, this is Keith. Just so the board also knows, and Chief Hankert and I talked about this whole process over the last couple days. We are going to continue doing what we're doing. We're still taking phone calls. We're still taking people at the front windows at the fire station, and it seems to be working, and we're not getting a lot of pushback. And a lot of it is because we still continue to staff the building, the 7 days a week. So we at the life safety building are going to continue. One of the big regards is that lobby area we have isn't really a lobby, it's a hallway. And so we're going to continue at the life safety building doing what we've been doing and not open that back up at this point.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I think the driver for us is that we're getting a lot of Yeah, the demand is increasing for access to planning and assessing, and so this makes more sense where we have the room to be able to do it.
Absolutely. I just wanted to let you guys know that we will not, you know, we're not going to be opening up the lobby, but what we've been dealing with has been working fine. I would agree that it's not the best way to do business at the town office.
Okay. Yeah. When we started talking about this, I didn't envision you guys doing anything different than what you're doing. I don't think you can get two people in your lobby and socially distance them.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys are going to keep doing what you're doing.
Correct.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, so we'll plan to put this in place starting on Monday?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Okay. Hey, Trish, are you in tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay, I'll pop over and see you.
Okay.
Okay, Trish, if you need me for anything, I'm available all week, so if you need me for anything,
okay,
give me a call. I can be there in about 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, is that it for the COVID discussion?
Yep, I think that's good.
We covered everything?
Yep.
Okay, then we'll move on to our other new item business, sewer and dog warrants. Who's going to speak to that?
Sure. I'm not sure if Julie's on the phone. Okay. So Terry prepared the sewer warrant for you guys, and I believe that you saw it today when you came in. So the next step is that it will go out. It'll go through the tax collector's office to send out those sewer bills. They'll be due July 21st, I believe, was the date, but don't quote me on that. And then she will have the dog warrant for you guys. She's got a warrant for you guys to sign for the dogs that haven't been registered yet. So if I will need you guys to pop back in at some point today or tomorrow or Friday to sign that.
Okay, not today.
I talked to her this afternoon. I talked to her this afternoon. I think she said they're down 65 dogs, which is down from the 147 they were at a couple weeks ago. So, you know.
Yeah. I'm available either day. I can come in either day.
Okay. I think it's ready to go. And there are also some other stuff for you guys to sign that came up today for the trustees, which is part of my town administrator report, but.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, does that do it for the sewer and dog warrant? Everybody happy with that? Okay, and either send me a text message or an email or something and let me know, and I will come in and sign.
Okay.
Okay, moving on to old business, the sale of town property.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, you guys had asked me to inquire with the town's attorney about how we're going to go about selling the Moose Run Drive. And then
yep.
The attorney's correspondence is in your packets today. So there's some back stuff that we have to do, and he has sort of offered to help prepare that stuff if we needed him or wanted him to. He had mentioned getting an appraisal. I don't know who sort of does that. So I guess
I wonder if it's worth spending any money, right? So we've got a parcel of property. We know there's somebody interested in it. We know the tax assessment because that's what we have.
Right.
I'm not sure it's worth spending any money to get a property value, which may be higher or lower than the tax assessment. And does it really matter? Because you know, the best we can hope for is what it's assessed for.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree too.
Because we could wind up spending more for the assessment and wind up getting a lot less than what we thought we were going to get.
The only question I would have would be finding out how, does anybody know how that particular parcel was acquired or how we have obtained it?
I do not know. It was way before my time.
Okay. I can look into that.
What else did he say? I think we could keep this. I would suggest we just keep this pretty simple. We decide what we think a minimum value is for it. Pick the date that we want to have the bids due. Let's see.
Yeah, and then just have a bid opening, and we may only get one bid.
We might.
I mean, we could probably consider having it on either the first or second meeting in July, you know, depending on how long you want to keep the bid open for. If we put the bid out now or soon, we can have it opened, and then it would be July 8th. Would be the first meeting in July.
That would give us what? That would give us 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks for bids to come in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a fair amount of time.
Hey, John?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Paul Dexter, not Chief. It's Paul Dexter. do I understand this correctly that is not a buildable lot, correct?
That is correct.
I do not believe it is.
Okay. So it would have to be in a butter to buy it to expand their property line. That's the only value it really has.
Yeah.
Unless somebody wants to put a tent up on it.
Okay. Because it has no structures on it currently, right, that allow it to be a buildable lot as long as they built on the same footprint?
No. There's nothing there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is everybody satisfied with that?
I'm sorry, Trish. Trish, back to your question. Actually, it says on the card it was a tax deed in 2009.
Oh, okay.
So we got it for non-payment.
Okay.
So, John, I think we put together the RFP, have all the bids due by July 6th, which is that Monday, before we would meet.
Yep.
Other terms, period, date, location, we'll put all the standard stuff in the bid notice, you know, to be opened at the town office. Do we want a deposit with the bid or just take a bid?
I'd say just take the bid.
Yeah, I would agree. Tom, Amy?
Yeah.
Because then if we wind up taking a deposit, then whoever doesn't win, we wind up having to return the deposit to.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So, just have sealed bids. and with the open, have them in by the Friday before, and then we'll open them on Wednesday. Yeah.
We want to set a time limit for closing after we accept their bid, 30 days, 60 days, or not, just because banks are...
Yeah,
it's not going to be big money, so I don't...
With some being open, some not being open.
I don't think it's going to matter because, you know, we're not talking big money. So this is probably going to be a cash. So there's probably no bank involved.
I don't think we need to go that in depth.
I'll put it together and send it to you guys before I send it out, just to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah. If you want to put a closing date, I would say 60 days after bid opening.
Yeah. Not like we're in a hurry.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Because somebody might need a little bit of time to straighten out their finances to get the cash, if it's going to be a cash bid.
Yeah. So the other thing that we have the option to do is set a minimum price. If we don't set one, then we have to accept whatever the lowest bid is or the highest bid is that actually meets all the requirements, right? If we set a minimum price and nobody meets that, then we don't have to accept a low ball.
Yeah.
The property is assessed at $3,000. I would suggest we do something like $1,500.
I was going to say $2,000.
Do you want to talk about this in a non-public session?
No, because it's got to be in the terms of we have to say what the minimum is, or we can't impose a minimum. So.
Oh.
I'm agreeable to 15.
Okay.
Tom, what do you think?
John, you should have held in there. I was going to agree with you for 2,000.
We?
That's
We can do two. I just threw that out.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do two. Let's do two.
Okay. All right, so Trish, you got all that?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to give it away.
No.
No, no.
Oh, I'm very, very conservative. Oh, it's probably worth whatever. What's it assessed for? It's probably worth that amount of money to perhaps in a butter.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Are we happy? Is there anything else we need to put in there?
No, I don't think so.
No, I think that's everything that the lawyer had mentioned.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know of any ordinances or procedures that we have in town records for the sale of property. But. This is the first time since I've been on any of the boards or anything like that I've heard of the town selling any property.
Yeah, I mean, Trish and I had looked, and it was a few years ago, the last time one got sold.
Yeah. Okay, so if we're If we're happy with that, then we can move on to the town administrator's report.
Okay. We had a resignation at the transfer station, and I put his resignation letter in your correspondence to read. I did leave it out of the packets, however, because it was somewhat medical in nature, and I didn't feel comfortable giving that information out to everybody. However,
I think I think you did right there.
Okay. So I did in lieu of trying to save time and trying to get, you know, Nate squared away with things at the transfer station, did repost the position as open prior to getting your guys' approval. So I hope
Before we get too far, I would make a motion that we accept the resignation of Charles Shekloff with regret.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Does anybody have any comments on the motion? If not, I will call for a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Solotello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you.
And, yeah, that was right. I talked to Nate last weekend, and I sort of gave him the freebie to go ahead and post it and start looking for somebody to fill it.
Okay, great. I've had one phone call inquiry about the position thus far, so hopefully we'll be able to talk to that gentleman.
Okay, good.
The other thing was we got some correspondence from the Health Trust about a dental holiday that they're going to be, because I think what happened all the dental offices were closed down for a bit. People weren't using their benefit, so they're going to return some of the surplus and then also allow for an extra 50% of their plan year maximums for July 2020 through June 30th, 2021. So I just wanted to let you guys know that that's you'll be seeing coming around. And similarly, the Welfare Association is waiving any membership fees for the next year going forward, so we're going to be taking advantage of that again so we don't have to pay for the next year's membership. Oh, and then I had my notes here. So Peg has asked to use some of her discretionary time that she was not able to use because of the pandemic. She had a very nice vacation with her spouse planned that got sort of taken away, and she's asked to take some Mondays off during the summer, and I've approved that for her. So I just wanted to let the board know that she'll be taking Mondays off. It shouldn't really have a huge impact because she has been able to do a lot of, you know, that the payroll stuff on Tuesdays. And she her and I sat down and we went through the process of looking at what was spent out of our out of the line for the building maintenance and repairs that she goes through and requests reimbursement from the trustees of the trust fund. And so when you come in tomorrow or Friday to sign some of that stuff, you'll see that correspondence as well, so that we can sort of replenish that line.
So we just signed a check to them to put the new money in, and now we're going to turn around and ask to give it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know. Jim, you know how accountants are.
Yeah.
Jim, you know how accountants are.
Oh, yeah. They want to touch it twice. They get paid twice.
Exactly.
Hey, Paul, since you're still here, speaking of buildings, how's planning coming with you and BPS to get your renovations to the life safety building started?
Very good. I had a conversation with Barry just the end of last week. He had got me numbers for the bathroom renovations. They came in at about $71,000. And so now he's working on the front entrance and working on the water filtration. It does look like we're also going to have enough money to do the windows like originally planned.
Okay, good.
Yep, so those numbers are looking very well.
Good, okay. Yeah, I was just thinking about it. I know BPS has been busy. They got a lot going on right now, so glad they got us in the queue.
Yeah, Barry's been very good to work with on this project. So
great.
Trish?
Thanks.
I noticed under transfer stations, was there some question about holiday hours?
Yes, they will have the approval to be closed on the actual 4th of July holiday, which is a Saturday, and to be open on the Friday, which the town office will be closed on.
I think that's fair.
Okay. I'll let them know. They wanted to put a sign out. They wanted to let everybody know as soon as they could about the change of hours for that weekend.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me.
They make more sense.
Yeah. And then we, as a group, need to, I'm letting you guys know that we're going to be pool. I'm going to have the department heads do the PAF for the wage adjustment and the COLA for FY21. And we have to start the review process for employees. And I just, as it's my first time doing this with everybody, I just wanted to make sure that we're all sort of on the same page that with how the process works.
Okay.
Do you have any? How has it worked in the past?
Paul, since you're there,
I kind of knew that was coming.
Blame the loss for words.
I was going to suggest that. Hey, dog. Oh, it must be John's dog. I was going to suggest.
That was my mutt.
I was going to suggest for consideration that perhaps the town consider doing the evaluations the way the state does it. And, Jim, I'm not sure if the military, when you're in it, does it the same way. But what happens is that, for example, my evaluation comes up in August, because that's my anniversary date. I sit down with my supervisor and have a discussion about my work performance, and then she checks off the boxes, and she offers comments, and, you know, we go back and forth to see if we agree on it, but she primarily takes responsibility to do my evaluation. And I think with the town, I would suggest we do it the same way, that the department heads could have the authority to sign off on an employee's evaluation instead of it having to come to the board for approval, so that the approval of the evaluation is left in the hands of the department head with consultation of the employee. And I think the only ones we should be doing would be the department heads themselves. And that might make things a little easier. And my viewpoint on that is that the department heads probably know best the work issues with an employee and their performance. So that was a suggestion that I was going to just throw out there to see how other people felt about it.
Hey, John.
I like you.
May I comment?
Go ahead, Paul.
So to Tom's point, that's exactly how we do it. Each department head does their own employees, and I think in Chief Hankard's aspect, he has the sergeant do the patrolman, the lieutenant does the sergeant, and the chief does the lieutenant. I tend to do just the full-time employees. We don't go with our on-call staff. We don't see a lot of them. They work, you know, maybe a couple hours a week, unless we're talking about an opportunity for some type of merit raise. We do the per diems, but the only thing that I really do is the full-time staff, and then the select board does the department heads. That's the way it's always been done in the past.
But I think the only difference is we don't do them on anniversary. We do them all in June. So that if there are any merit pay increases, they can be implemented in July when the new budget comes in.
Correct. Yeah, doing anniversary dates can sometimes they can get lost on you. When you have so many different anniversary dates, it does get a little cumbersome. I know in my roofing business, we used to do date of hire. But I always felt that it has worked well doing it. You know, I would like to do it earlier than June. I think we should do it in, you know, March or April. I think it's worked well for doing them all at the same time.
I'm actually a fan of anniversary dates. So then you're not doing them all at once, especially at year end or at town meeting time, budget seasons, and that you're just doing one every, you know, however many employees you have throughout the year.
Yeah, but on the other hand, we're not talking huge departments with, you know, dozens or hundreds of employees.
I know that, but we're still closing the year out right now. And
well, yeah, so but I think Paul's point, you know, April is kind of in between all of that, right? It's after town meeting and all of that's over before we start wrapping up the fiscal year. I don't, you know, I'm not sure it matters when the actual evaluation happens, as long as it happens in the year prior to any recommendation for a merit increase.
Yeah, I would agree with Jim. You know, I've always been a proponent that we've kind of put the cart before the horse when we're doing merit increases, because we're working on we're putting our budget together in September of the previous year for the next year. Any good manager already knows, and so do the employees. They quite honestly know what's coming. If there's anything that's a surprise on their employee review, then the manager is not doing their job.
So, but then I have a question that just flew right out of my head. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, what is the minimum that somebody has to receive in order to get a merit increase? Like, is the review this process like a forced number type answer where you're saying, okay, well, this employee got 3s across the board out of 5. Is that an acceptable for a merit increase, or where is that threshold?
I think it's very subjective. I've been doing employee reviews.
Which it shouldn't be.
20,
right.
Well, no, it, to some degree it should be, because you're looking at each individual
But you're not looking at the individual. You're looking at the employee who is doing the job. It's not.
No. Let me finish. So you might have an employee. I am of the mindset that if an employee is doing his job or her job, they're right smack dab in the middle. Okay? If they're doing poorly in one regard but doing better in another, that still may even them out to doing their job. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are eligible for a merit raise. If you have an employee that's going above and beyond constantly throughout the year, it's up to that department head to put them in for a merit raise based on their performance. That's where I'm saying it's subjective. So it is subjective based on each employee and to what extent they go above and beyond, or they're just coming to work doing their job every day. Then that, in my opinion, does not mean that they are eligible for any type of merit. So when I use the word subjective, that's the term I'm using it in. Not that, you know, it's subjective because I like you or I don't like you. It's more of subjective based on their job performance. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I just think that we should have some sort of uniformity because like, they're all still employees of the town of San Bernardino. So,
well, and frankly, it opens us up to a lot of liability.
Yeah. So if we say
we have five grades on our evaluation form's got, you know, all these different categories with excellent, above average, above expectations, satisfactory, below or average, poor. And then, you know, there's a spot at the bottom where you give an overall performance evaluation. If we don't have some, and we're not going to solve it tonight, but this highlights, and I know where Trish was going, this highlights the challenge. If we don't have some kind of policy, then it, you know, somebody could sue for favoritism and say, well, so-and-so, you know, I got a satisfactory and so did that other person, but they got a raise and I didn't. So I get your point, Paul, that you know, there's some subtleties to those evaluations, but, you know, at a minimum, we need to set a bottom. I think we should set a bottom threshold and figure out, you know, how we can do this across the board in a consistent way that's not going to, unfortunately, leave us vulnerable somewhere.
Yeah,
we're not going to fix it tonight, but it's...
No, I agree. So when, because I was on the committee, and John, you were on the committee as well, when we looked at the pay matrix study committee, you know, that was one of the biggest conversations we had with regards to employee reviews, because that was actually part of that process of developing the employee review process for all departments. One of the things that fell through the cracks at the time that we did this was that training piece, because we do have some department heads, and I'm not saying it's bad, but we have some department heads that never really have done a true employee evaluation of somebody. And so we had a lot of discussion of whether or not to even have that numerical scoring and eliminate that type of that part of it, because it does create the problems like you're talking about. Well, this person, the department head likes them, so they got all fives, and, you know, he doesn't like me, so I got all three. And so there was a lot of discussion about that numerical portion of the evaluation. And to Trish's point, if we tie that to performance compensation, then I think we're opening ourselves up for that just like you said, that liability issue.
No, I think literally that was the opposite.
No, I disagree,
right?
Trish.
I just,
let me give you an example.
I think what Ian was trying to say is that if we are going to be reducing some of that liability, if we have a standardized like system, and that does not mean that you don't have the, ability to sort of expand upon, you know, those, your evaluation of that person by
citing examples throughout the year or whatever, just like you said, if you have an employee at evaluation time that has no idea, you know, what's going on and coming out of left field, then that manager has done not done their job appropriately.
Absolutely.
So, I think
it shouldn't be at the day of the evaluation.
No, of course not. So I think what we're trying to say is, like, if we say, like, we have to be able to, if we have a standardized system, it limits the exposure to liability because we're all following the same way.
Yep, I agree with that. But the piece of that that's missing is, like, I fought for many, you know, probably 4 or 5 years ago when we put this together, was that training piece that never occurred with department heads.
Without the department heads that
have that ability to do reviews, then we slide into that, well, he's my friend and not your friend kind of mentality, which really opens us up to problems. But to Jim's point, we're not going to solve this tonight. I got it.
Yeah.
I can throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing, and I once worked for a company where you got your review and then they laddered everybody. So you went from the bottom to the top on the ladder, and then the ladder got put into the overall company, and the top 10% got merit raises. That really worked out to be unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless of where we come down, it's putting some kind of – so, for example, I'm reading right now the Town of Meredith policy. And they say evaluations are one of several factors the Town of Meredith uses in connection with compensation, promotion, and retention decisions. Okay.
And
at least it's stated.
Go ahead, Trish.
That in that particular instance in that town, there were times what would happen was, because similarly in those in every town, we have people who have not been trained on how to give appropriate performance evaluations, and so therefore all performance evaluations would come through my office and they would be read before given to the employee, and then they would be given to the employee along with a merit increase, or in some instances not if they did not score at least a 3 out of 5.
So I think this just highlights that we've got some work to do, and we've talked about it before, but we need to put a little more form around it and find that balance between being overly formulaic, where even an average employee gets a raise right alongside the guy that's or gal who's going way above and beyond, and, you know, leaving it completely up to somebody's opinion without being backed up by some data. So.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yep, absolutely.
And then, Jim, how
do we want to finish out the year?
Well, I think that we should finish out the year by trying to get those evaluations done by in June, really.
So I guess my point being is the department heads understand that. I think the department, like, my reviews are all done. How are we going to deal with, because of the social distancing, normally the select board have gotten together in non-public and discussed department heads, did the reviews, and only one review has been issued. Based on input from all three selectmen, which we used to get three separate reviews for each selectman within the department head, which was very cumbersome. Probably in the last 2 or 3 years, we've done just one employer review for the department heads with input from all three department selectmen.
Yep, that's how we did Trish's when she had her 6 month review, 8 months in.
My 6 month glowing review. Glowing.
I think that's the way we've been doing it for 4 years, Paul. It's been done that way as long as I've been a selectman.
Yep. So really, man,
so, yeah, that'll be
you guys get together to do that.
And then, Jim, there was when we were in the military, there was the OER, and we got no merit raise.
No, but we got longevity raises, so as long as you as long as you keep showing up. So, Paul, so you know, we do have a another line we can use for non-public meetings. We obviously we haven't published it because it's for non-public.
Sure.
So we have that ability.
And
but,
we have
you know,
to
so, John, that but that's less. So, John, but that does, you know, we didn't talk about it. We talked about the town office operation. Are you considering going back to some form of in-person meeting, or do you want to keep going with this virtual approach?
It's going to be kind of hard to do the virtual and let the person look at their
No, I just mean in general, not.
Yeah, well, in general, I think the three of us are gonna do a review and then get together and talk the review and put out one review, and then that whether we're gonna talk in person with that department head or whether we're gonna give him the review and then do it telephonically. I'm not sure which. Probably gonna do the telephonically.
Okay. I kind of shifted gears there. I was just talking in general about Board of Selectmen meetings. You know, we didn't talk about it when we talked about reopening the town office. Are we also looking at a shift back to, you know, our biweekly meetings actually being in person at the town office?
As far as I'm concerned, I'm in favor of it. The only catch we would have to do is to limit the number of townspeople so that we didn't have more than 10 people in that room.
Yeah, and then you know we can continue to do a combination of, you know, we could be in the room but still have it online, you know, on audio so people can listen and call in.
Yeah.
Tom, what do you think?
I agree. I think that the sooner we can get back to meeting on Wednesdays together in the town office, I think would be a good thing. And I think, as you just suggested, there could be some accommodations made where people can also call in at the meeting if they have questions and certainly can listen to the meeting. And I think if we can keep the visitors down to 10 or whatever the limit is, I think that would be fine. For people,
I think that's another thing people are kind of looking for is a sign of, you know, again, we don't want to jump into anything crazy, but I think we can control that. We've got enough room there in the conference room. We can spread out.
Yeah. And, you know, if need be, we always can use the town hall. But the other thing that can happen also along with this is that if someone wants to come in and meet with the selectman about a certain item as a citizen, they can make an appointment at a certain time to come in, and that would help keep the traffic down, help reduce the number of people in the room. So I think there's different ways to manage it, but I think it'd be really helpful be able to sit down and look at each other face to face and have a discussion about some of the things we've been talking about. And so I think if we could move in that direction, that would be a good thing.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. And
I am too. So when do we want to start this?
I'd say the next meeting on the 24th.
Yeah, we'll try that.
Okay.
Okay, then.
All right, sorry, I know that was kind of thrown into the personnel discussion, but that'll help with that issue as well.
Yeah, because we'll be able to discuss things without stepping on each other's voices.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll start on the 24th with a selectman meeting, meeting in residence.
Okay, at the town office, in residence.
Yep.
Okay. The only bad thing is about think... it is I'm going to have to dress better. I can't be in my shorts and T-shirt.
Jim, don't show up on a battleship. We don't need the protection.
Yeah, I should have saved all my CBR gear from the Navy. Gas masks. And.
There we go.
Yeah, if Jim shows up with a steel pot on his head, then we know we're in trouble.
Hey, Jim, I think I got an old OBA kicking around somewhere.
Oh, yeah. My favorite.
That come
gotta love NSA.
A little bit stale.
So that was all I had for my town administrator's report.
Okay, well, then with that, we'll move on to selectmen's reports. The only one I've got is... we had a Rec Commission meeting via Skype. Jim, you've already mentioned that the summer camp has been canceled. It was going to be just too costly and not enough manpower to handle handle the social distancing. So they did that. Another thing that was talked about was the parking at the Winnesquam Samberton Town Beach. The Rec Commission has been getting complaints that there's not enough parking there, and everybody goes there, and when they drive by to find a parking place, it's all full of cars from New York and Maine and Connecticut and things like that. And I reminded people that people from New York and Connecticut and Maine also have own houses in Samberton, and they like to come to the beach. It's been said that, you know, if you go by and there's no parking, then just come back at a later date.
Yeah. So that actually brings up one thing I wanted to circle back on from last week. Last meeting, we talked about the funding that went into the beach on Dr. True Road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think we got a little wrapped around. So the work that was done on that beach back in 2009 was done under the ARRA, the American Recovery and Restoration Act. So that was federal funding that we got to do the work on the beach. And so it's the standard rule is if it's federally funded, we can't restrict access to the beach. And I bring that up because some people I know saw the meeting minutes from last week or last meeting and said, well, if it's a town beach, can we close it to just residents only? But because it was federal funding, even though we own the beach, just like Hermit Lake, we can't restrict access to people because everybody pays their income tax. I just wanted to make sure we cleared that up.
Yeah, and I mean, without actually going down and talking to the people and asking them if they own a house and making them prove that they own a house in Samberton, how do you know that New York plate is somebody who has a second house on Dr. True Road somewhere and they want to go to the beach? If you go by what the license plate on the car is, you may you may offend some Pemberton residents who own a second house here. So.
Yep.
And this is what I explained to the Rec Commission at the meeting. And
well, yeah. And you're right.
Somebody
you know, at this point,
about,
if the parking is full, then there's probably too many people to be there anyway.
Yeah. And somebody asked about, does the town own a parcel of land near there? The discussion was that parcel of land may be able to be cleared and stone put down there and used as a parking lot for the beach. But I don't
hey, John,
I think that.
John, it's the chief.
Go ahead.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. There's a parcel behind the house on that corner that the town owns all the way. I think it's like 60-some-odd acres that the town owns all the way back up to Lower Bay Road. And there is an access, and I think it's a gated access right now with a couple, with just a chain that goes up into that lot that the town owns. So at some point down the road, that could be turned into a parking area for overflow parking and get people off of Dr. Drew Road.
Yeah, because that's a biggie. There's been a lot of people parking on Dr. Drew Road and limiting access on the road.
Correct. But you're absolutely right. There is about a 60-acre parcel that the town does own that in years past there was discussion about building a substation for the fire department, building a rec area with, you know, a soccer field, all that type of stuff. And that was way before my time, but the historical data I've heard from people that have been around for a while is that's why that parcel has stayed in the town's name.
Okay, so that's something we might want to consider looking into.
Okay. Yeah, although I would argue this is not the year for it, because if the parking lot there is full, that means the beach is probably too crowded already.
Yeah, no. I wouldn't even attempt to do it. And even if you did attempt to do it, by the time you got it done, it would be September, and people wouldn't be wanting to go to the beach anyway.
We'll do it when we pave Maple Circle.
Yeah, right. That way we can pave the parking lot, right?
Yeah, I couldn't resist that. Sorry.
That's okay. I still get hounded by a couple of people from down there. Okay.
Well, we still have action there. But.
Yeah. Jim, do you have anything?
Yeah. So I got a couple of comments from some residents on the issue of flags in the square. So you and Tom remember a couple years ago when the decision was made to switch from the regular American flags to the stylized banners, driven, I think, mostly by an interpretation of the flag code that said they have to be illuminated at night or you have to take them down. And I don't think it's any surprise that I have not heard a single resident in 2 years say they like the banners better than the flags, except maybe Paul Dexter, because of entanglement issues.
Right. I like the banners.
I know you do. So I did a little research, and you know, when it comes to the flag code, those are guidelines and they're not law per se. And there's a lot of interpretation around the phrase that's in the code that says proper illumination, and that's not defined in any particular way. And you know, there are some interpretations that say, look, as long as you can tell it's a flag, it's not, you know, just a lump in the pitch dark, that's adequate for illumination. I think for a variety of reasons, but probably not the least of all, what everybody's been going through for the last few months, I think people want and would appreciate seeing the flags back up in the square. I think it will, especially, you know, with Old Home Day being scaled back and the anniversary being put off, I think that's the kind of thing that would really give people a good feeling to see that and have that pride back, you know, driving down 132 and up Tower, up Meeting House Hill.
And
yeah, you know, Paul, you probably see it heading
and
out.
Any,
yep, up. Yeah, go ahead, John.
My understanding of what happened, I think I was a selectman, John, you were too, is that the issue came to the board that the flags that were up there, the American flags, were donated by an individual to the town. And as I understand it, that they were pretty tattered. And so there was a request of the selectmen to replace the flags, which we agreed to. The stuff that was put up, we had no input into. In fact, my wife hates them, that she wants the right flags put up. So the selectmen had no idea that the flags that are there was what was purchased and put up. And I suspect that was up to, you know, Katie North and the town administrators doing to select that particular type of flag. But we had no, we agreed to replace the flags, and that's what I thought we were doing. But then when we saw them, it was a lot different than what we thought would be up. I agree that the flags that we had in the square should be put back up. And I think a good example is Dick Howe along his property at Gazer. Every year for the
yep.
last few years has put up the North American flag and looks really good. I think if we were willing to purchase the right type of flag, I think someone like him would be more than willing to come down and put them up on the telephone poles. And
So there's a couple parts to that, right? So I've already done a check. There are 20 poles. If you start at the corner of Gulf Road and 132, right at the island in the middle of the road, from there up to Bodwell's driveway on Meeting House Hill, there are actually 21 poles, but one of them is tucked in behind trees, and it would be a waste trying to put a flag on it. So there are 20 poles that could have flags on them. In the town office today, we have 20 flags that are in excellent condition. So back to your recollection, Tom, it was, I remember it well, and it was all about the lighting, driven by one individual. The flags that came down got stored. They're actually back in Melanie's office, and Trish has a couple in her office.
As I drive around the state, and I go through these these small towns, as far as the lighting is concerned, a lot of these small towns have American flags up on telephone poles, and there's no lighting with them. But that's pretty pervasive in at least New Hampshire. You see the American flag on telephone poles, and you know, it looks really good, and I think it's I think it's important that we put them back up the way they should be. And,
So right now in the office we've got 20 flags that are in we have more than 20, but there are 20 that are in good shape. We have 20 poles that are all in good condition. I did a survey. I walked all of the poles from the corner up to the top of Meeting House Hill. We need about seven brackets to replace ones that aren't there anymore. What I'd like to propose. Go ahead, Tom.
the person that put the flags up in the square that you have now, he charged a minimal amount of money was Mr. Ellis, member of the planning board.
Right. So.
Okay. Yeah.
So we need to. So there's a little bit of material that needs to get bought. You know, some screws and some additional brackets just to have some backup. We need to look into hiring a truck, although I've got another idea that I want to run down. But and I seem to recall it was like $75 an hour for the use of the
right.
truck.
Yeah.
And also on your list, add 3 flashlights. And anybody who complains about lighting, we'll give them a flashlight and they can pick a flag.
I don't think anybody's going to complain. I think people will just be happy to see him back. The other part that goes with this is we need to actually request permission from the utility department to put the flags up. You know, the poles are owned by Eversource and
yep.
Consolidated. I've got the form. I've got it all filled out. I've got all the pole numbers. My daughter and I, you know, walked and got all the numbers off the poles. So if we approve this, I can go ahead and get that to Trish. We can get it submitted.
Yep.
And then, you know, move forward on putting them up. Now, I know Paul's got concerns, and I understand them, about how the flags would get wrapped around the utilities. And, you know, in researching this, the requirement is that any attachment is supposed to be at least 10 feet away from any utility. So if we had flags that were getting wrapped around wires, that means they were too close to begin with. Yeah, we got to balance that with keeping anything up off the ground. You know, 15 and a half feet is what the NASC standard is to make sure that, you know, trucks and things can get by. Although most of these telephone poles don't extend into the roadway itself. So there may be a little bit of adjustment that gets done, but, you know, the intent would be to put them as low as possible to avoid traffic and then keep them far away from any of the other obstructions on the pole so they don't get wrapped, because I know that's the headache that Paul had to deal with when they were up.
Hey, John, it's the chief. Can I give a little input?
Sure.
So I want to make it clear, first off, I don't object to the flags. I prefer the banners because of maintenance issues. But what really concerns me with the flags is the maintenance of them. I would rather see no flag than a tattered flag. And so that, as a veteran, that bothers me that the flags that we have flown over the last number of years have gotten beaten up. They're hanging off. They're breaking off the poles. And it's nobody's fault, but originally the whole, you know, American flag on the poles in the square was having people go buy them and donate them. And it's nobody's fault, but you go down to Home Depot, you buy an American flag made in Taiwan, it's not going to hold up as well, and that's what we were seeing a lot of, is those flags at the two positions where they were held to the pole were breaking off. So then in turn, we're having people stop the fire station all the time and say, hey, you got to fix that flag. That's not right. And so my guys were doing their best to try to get out there as quick as they could to fix those. And so long story short, I think if we spend a little extra money on the flags and the poles and the attachments, you know, those little plastic spinner things with a little metal hook, those don't hold up very well. And we leave them up all summer long, they really take a beating. So that has always been really my concern. And to Jim's point, that they do get hung up into the utilities, namely the cable wires. And because they have that metal wrap around the cable wires, that tends to catch the flag. So that's been my only main concern. And you know, over the last 8 years, 6 or 7 or 8 years, we've been putting the flags up. That's what I have seen in my experience. And if we can do something to eliminate that, I would certainly support the flags being put back up.
Yeah, and Paul, so I wasn't trying to paint you as a bad guy. I mean, I know you had some legitimate concerns about the things with the utilities, and it does make your life easier, but I appreciate you saying you like the flags better. So the flags that we've got are all in good condition, right? So I went and looked at every one of them. They're a heavy-duty nylon. They're not a thin. So I don't have any concerns about them lasting the summer. I agree that we have a, and I'm going to talk about it when we get to a motion here. We have a line for patriotic purposes to address these kinds of things. And I agree, we ought to be replacing this stuff with some frequency to make sure that we're not putting anything up there, because I'm with you. But the lighting doesn't bother me. A torn, ripped, tattered flag, that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. But the other thing, too, is the brackets. Those plastic brackets don't last. We need the aluminum.
Yeah, now these are...
Even though it's just a white aluminum bracket, but those tend to hold up better than the plastic ones.
Yep, no, I'm with you. And that's what the replacement brackets, just to make sure we've got enough, and they would all be metal. So if we're relatively in agreement, I was going to make a motion that we approve the expenditure of up to $500 from line, sorry, I closed my window to look at something else, 4583.000 patriotic purposes to purchase materials and hire the necessary services and trucks to install the flags through San Bertin Square.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I will have a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Sawatello.
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick.
Yes.
Selectman John Olmsted votes yes also. Motion passes unanimously. I agree that we should put the flags back up.
Great. Okay, so I will I'll get with Trish. We'll work on the materials. I'll get her the application and all the information for the poll permissions, and then we'll work on how we're going to get them up there. Like I said, I've got another idea that I want to look into, but worst case is we have to hire a bucket truck. And that funding, the $500 we just approved, ought to be able to cover all of that with a little leftover.
Okay.
All right, thanks. That was it.
Okay, Tom, do you have anything?
We didn't discuss the Welfare Association membership. It was on the agenda.
Oh.
Yeah.
Trish pointed it out. It's just that.
Yeah.
Trish mentioned it. It's just that they're not they're giving them out for free this year because of the COVID situation.
We
don't have to pay to renew it.
We currently belong. As a member?
I was on mute. We weren't a member, and I submitted an application for last year, so we'll renew for this year.
Okay, good. We should encourage Melody or someone to attend those training sessions.
Yeah. I'm not sure when they're meeting, but we can probably start to attend.
That's all I had.
Okay, Tom, you have anything more?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, then we will move on to approval of the meetings, and I will make a motion to approve the San Bertin Board of Selectmen minutes of May 27th, 2020. with any corrections.
I'll second.
Okay, has everybody got their corrections in to Trish?
Yeah, I'm all set.
Yep.
Hey, John, it's Keith, if I can.
Yes.
There was one section under planning board, the open air permit conversation. I don't think the minutes really reflected the conversation that Jim and I had regarding the application for open air permit, where it says discussion ensued by BOS.
So Paul,
who feels in disagreement.
Let me read you can I read you what I changed it to?
Oh, okay.
I had to. Yes. Starting with where it said discussion ensued, I just said Fire Chief Dexter said similar long-term approvals are granted to other venues in town (parentheses Still Hill, Krebs Farm) to accommodate their summer seasons. Selectman Dick doesn't think the town's open air permit is appropriate because the RSA that it cites (RSA 286:1) only pertains to shows, performances, and meetings, not dining. Regardless, he agreed that the permit was a good template to make sure all of the applicable health and safety concerns were addressed, and we should come up with a fee structure to cover the cost of enforcement and sanitation.
Perfect. Works for me.
Okay. Thanks.
I just didn't want to get painted the bad guy.
Yeah. All right.
Why not? If the shoe fits, wear it, Paul.
Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Okay, so okay. Is that the only correction? We got the corrections in?
Yeah.
Okay. Did we have a second to the... Yeah, Jim, you seconded that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any more comments about the motion? If not, I'll call a roll call vote. Selectman Tom Salatello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. Motion passes unanimously. Okay. Next board meeting is June 24th, 2020, and we will be meeting in the town offices in person.
Yep.
Okay. All we need now is one motion from the moral minority.
The moral minority votes that we adjourn till the call of the chair at the next meeting on the 24th of June, 5 o'clock.
I will second.
It's a non-debatable motion. All those in favor, Selectman Tom Salatello?
Yes.
Selectman Jim Dick?
Yes.
Selectman John Olmstead votes yes. We are in adjournment at 7:58 p.m. Thank you all for coming. Thanks to everybody that called in.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
See you in...
Have a good night.